Hello, this is Robert Ambrose, KPTZ Board President and host of Rhythm Connection. Like you, I'm waiting to hear Dr. Locke's weekly COVID-19 update. I depend on KPTZ to hear this crucial information because it allows me to better understand how the virus is affecting our community. It also helps me gauge when I might see my distant new grandson. You'd depend on KPTZ to hear Dr. Locke too, and KPTZ depends on you to keep broadcasting. Please consider clicking on the Donate Now button at kptz.org to give us your support for our efforts. Thank you.
And thank you, Robert, and a special thanks right now to Russell, Barbara, and Steve, also contributing this morning to the KPTZ Fund Drive. Don't forget, we'll be cutting over to the County Commissioners meeting any moment now. Dr. Locke with Willie Bentz and the commissioners. So do stay tuned.
From our KPTZ listeners and Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz, welcome. What a crazy end of week last week. Dr. Locke, I'm hoping you'll shed some light on the news that came out of nowhere and was impossible to implement. So hand it off to you.
Well, that's an excellent summary of events. And so yes, good morning. And so to start with, just looking at, as we often do at the national picture, COVID rates are going down rather dramatically in the United States. A 33% drop over the last 2 weeks, significant 17% drop in hospitalizations and a 13% drop in death rates. So that's all very good news. In Washington state, whereas we have plateaued and have started to drop, it's not near as fast as the rest of the states. And so in fact, Washington state has risen in the rankings of states based on COVID levels, and Washington state is now the sixth highest state in the country in terms of COVID activity, which is someplace we've never been before. We have the fourth wave in this state has plateaued, and over the last 2 weeks, cases have dropped by about 11%, hospitalizations only a little bit, a 5% drop. And the death rates actually stayed more or less the same. So still, on average, 10 people are dying every day of COVID-19 in Washington state. Regionally, Jefferson County continues to have one of the lowest rates in the state. We had 6 cases last week, 10 cases the week before. So that's a case rate of 50. 0.16 per 100,000. That's down a bit from the prior reporting period when it was about 63. Clallam County's holding stable at about 109 cases per 100,000. And Kitsap has dropped a bit and is now below 200 at 177 per 100,000. But statewide, things are still quite high. So the statewide case rate is 244 per 100,000, largely driven by the I-5 corridor, where places like King County, it's 238, Pierce County is 369, Snohomish County is 227. These are all levels that, had the roadmap to recovery plan stayed in effect, they would all have had to step back to a lower level. However, as we all know, let me cover the vaccine rates next, and then we'll get into what the governor announced on Thursday. Vaccine rates continue to rise, although slowly in the state. We now have an ample supply of the vaccine in the state, and demand has really dropped significantly. Statewide, if you look at the total population, about 36% are fully vaccinated, 46.5% have had at least one dose. And if you look just at the 16 and older, about 45% are fully vaccinated, and 58% have started their vaccination process. In Jefferson County, we continue to be among the highest in the state. We're of total population, 62% have initiated vaccination. That's the second highest in the state, and 53.5% are fully vaccinated, and that is the highest in the state. And if you look at those who are eligible, 16 and above, it's almost 70%, 69.68% have initiated vaccination, 60% are fully vaccinated. And that actually is the governor's target for ending all restrictions in Washington state by the end of June, is to have 70% of 16 and older vaccinated. Jefferson County is almost there. Actually, after this, these were as of the 14th. So after this weekend, we probably are there. Statistically. So that's all really good news. So bringing us up to date, as we all know, the CDC made some sweeping and somewhat unexpected recommendations on Thursday, driven by some really solid science. And there's a lot of good news in that, that the CDC was essentially reacting to two very strong research findings. Number one is the vaccines are extraordinarily effective in preventing disease. So people that are vaccinated have very little risk of actually getting infected. And if they do get infected, they have very mild disease. So they don't get hospitalized, and it's close to 100% effective in preventing death from COVID-19. So that's great news. Also, when people do get what are called breakthrough infections, so they get COVID infection, they test positive for COVID despite being vaccinated, they have very low viral levels and so are very unlikely to transmit the infection to anyone else. And that science is really what drove the CDC to conclude that vaccinated people can do pretty much anything they want, indoors or outdoors, without risk to themselves or risk to other people. So on Thursday, the governor had a press conference where he was already going to announce changes to the Roadmap to Recovery program. And so relative to that, his decision was that all counties go to phase three, irrespective of what their case rates were, and then setting the goal to end all restrictions, all masking, all COVID-related restrictions by the end of June or earlier if vaccination levels in those 16 or older exceed 70% for first dose. And that likely is an achievable goal, hopefully before the end of June. And the only thing that would, under his current plan, that would cause counties to have to step back is if their intensive care unit capacity fell below 10%. So if the ICUs were over 90% full. Reacting to the CDC guidelines that were released that day, the governor also stated a goal that he wanted his orders to, he was going to have them modified to come into full agreement with the CDC guidelines. And that involves three different orders. So he had a proclamation that was known as the No Mask, No Service, required retail vendors to deny service to people who are unmasked. There was also a proclamation by the Secretary of Health that required masking in indoor spaces. And finally, there's some fairly complicated labor and industry rules in occupational settings. So all three of those have to be modified for a decision, at least at the state level, to take effect. The governor also immediately eliminated any kind of capacity limits for spectator type events for people who are fully vaccinated. Concerts, baseball games, anything like that can be at full capacity if there's some way of assuring that everyone who's in attendance is fully vaccinated. So those were essentially the changes that the governor made. And as the CDC made clear, masking mandates are really not federal, with maybe a few exceptions that interstate commerce related. They're state and local. And so the governor's in the process of modifying his state guidelines, but Jefferson County is a county that has a local mandate as well. I issued a masking order back on May 28th of last year, prior to when there was a statewide mandate that was very similar to what eventually became the state mandate. And so I have the decision before me, should this local order be modified? And in considering that, I want to emphasize that there is some very good news for the CDC, is that vaccines have worked far beyond our wildest hopes and really are the way out of this pandemic. So that's great news. There are a lot of things that fully vaccinated people can do, we want to make sure and maximize that as much as possible. But we have some really serious ongoing challenges. Number one, as I mentioned, there's still very high rates of COVID in Washington State, and therefore high exposure risk for people who are susceptible to the infection. Also, we've got fairly low vaccination rates in a number of areas in the state. And statewide, our rates are really not much better than the country as a whole, almost identical, in fact. So we've got a long ways to go. We really only have about a third of our population fully vaccinated in Washington State. And we have to factor in, or I have to factor in too, that the vaccine does not always work. There are frail elders who are not fully protected. There are people who are immunosuppressed, who are on cancer chemotherapy or have had organ transplants, who may not benefit from the vaccine at all. They may be fully susceptible. And of course, there are children who are not eligible for vaccination, or those under 12. And we just started to vaccinate those between 12 and 15. So there are a lot of people at risk, and everyone who's unvaccinated is at risk of exposure and contracting the disease. And so, whereas the CDC guidelines are based on solid science, it is definitely not safe for unvaccinated people to be congregating indoors without masks or without attention to distancing. That is a very clear reality. And if we were to abandon indoor masking indiscriminately, the consequence would be that unvaccinated people would be congregating with other unvaccinated people and children and people who are immunosuppressed in a way that will increase transmission. This would not be the case in 4 to 6 weeks when we have very low levels in the state. But if we do things to drive transmission now, it will take a lot longer than 4 to 6 weeks to get rates down in the state. So what, consulted with really all the health officers in the state on Thursday, and have been reviewing the data on this. And what I've decided needs to happen in Jefferson County is first of all, we do need to maintain the indoor masking mandate in retail businesses and food service establishments. There's simply no practical way for business owners to verify who is vaccinated and unvaccinated. I don't want them to have to do that. Number two, I think we can remove virtually all outdoor masking mandates. The current Jefferson County mandate is just wear a mask if you're outdoors and you can't maintain distancing. But even that appears to be unnecessary now. We have solid evidence that COVID very rarely is transmitted outdoors. Maybe one out of every 1,000 cases is transmitted outdoors. So being outdoors is way safer than indoors, even if you're unvaccinated. The local order it was written a year ago. A bunch of things have changed in terms of masking standards. That needs to be updated. And I think it would benefit from clarifying that special events where it can be verified that people are fully immunized are actually fine. So concerts and spectator sports and really any kind of indoor service that is just involving fully vaccinated people should not be restricted at this point. But there it's the onus is on the person having the event to verify that in fact that is safe. But that seems to be a valuable incentive for people to get vaccinated. And then just my final point I would make is that's really the challenge that's before us right now is how do we get the vaccination levels up? Because the demand has dropped dramatically across the state, across the country, and we're not to the finish line yet. And where some people have speculated that you know more or less restrictions for people that are unvaccinated will be a powerful incentive to vaccination. Although the polling data along that question is not very favorable. That does not really seem to be what motivates people. Cash, on the other hand, and tangible benefits do seem to have some motivating abilities or potentials. And so a number of people are trying that, lotteries and cash incentives. There's a federal program that you can get a 10% discount on your groceries, and states are giving fishing and hunting licenses to people for getting vaccinated. Beer and wine gifts, a shot for a shot, I think will become quite common. Washington State's considering it. We're talking about doing that in Jefferson County. There's even the governor mentioned a joint for a jab, a cannabis gifts for getting vaccinated, and so incentives are fine. We need to figure out how to get vaccination levels up. Some of the most important polling I have seen on this is that the real issue keeping people who are vaccine hesitant from getting vaccinated, and that's about 21% of those remaining. We think of the third or so of people who are not getting vaccinated, about 13% are hardcore anti-vaxxers and will not get vaccinated under any circumstances, and about 21% are in that maybe group. And for them, it's a trust issue. So we have to earn their trust. And so we're really focusing more and more on trusted medical advisors, you know, moving this to the medical office space, getting faith leaders and pastors involved, and family members and trusted advisors, because that's, you know, people should trust in the vaccine. And if they have a ways to go to get to that point, we should do everything we can to build trust. But ultimately, the pandemic's not going to be over until we get the population at about an 85% vaccination level. And that includes children. And because, you know, as long as we can't vaccinate children, they will continue to be the reservoir for the infection. That was covering a lot of material, and we have some good KPTZ questions, but I'll open it to the commissioners first.
Thank you, Dr. Locke. Greg, any questions?
Yeah, Dr. Locke, I was wondering if you could speak to the any new data about the vaccine effectiveness against the variants.
Yes, that was other good news. The messenger RNA vaccine, so the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, appear to still be very effective against the variants. So that factored into the CDC guidelines as well. We're less sure about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the variants. And that doesn't mean that we know that it's ineffective. We just don't know. We don't have good data addressing that question.
And, you know, I have a couple other questions just about how to give supportive guidance to retailers and things as we go into this sort of interesting phase, but I didn't see the KPTZ questions. I'm sure some of them are addressed in there, so I'll hold off with other questions.
Thanks. Okay.
Heidi?
The only question I got from a constituent this week was, and you'll probably be able to guess who it is when I ask the question, her place of business has a play area for kids, and how do you, do we let the kids play when their parents are sipping cider?
Yes, and I'll give Christy a call on that.
Okay.
We've been in very active conversation on what's okay and what's not. But based on this new data about how, you know, how safe, it's safer than we thought to do things outdoors. Unfortunately, it's riskier than we thought to do things indoors. It's now conclusive that COVID-19 is airborne transmitted and can in fact spread even further indoors than we previously imagined. So that's new data we have to deal with, but we can really back off on outdoor restrictions. It's very safe, especially this time of the year.
Okay. And you guessed right.
Dr. Locke, I have one question. I've been following the New York baseball team, which had a number of breakthrough infections. What's kind of the take on that? Is that just because of the amount of indoor time that the fully vaccinated people spent together? But that was an outbreak of what, 8 cases, all of fully vaccinated people. What's your understanding?
Yeah, and as I understand, all asymptomatic. So we wouldn't have even known about them, except that, you know, the sports players go through very frequent testing. We're learning more and more about breakthrough infections. We have now officially had 5 known breakthrough infections in Jefferson County among fully vaccinated Jefferson County residents. All have had very mild COVID symptoms, but it does happen. And we sort of expected that from the beginning, that this is not 100% effective vaccine. The important thing though is that those who get breakthrough infections have very low viral levels. And so should be at very low risk, but not zero risk of transmission. So in theory, at least, you could have a breakthrough infection and you know, with a very close contact, like a household contact, you could infect them. But it's probably something that's very rare, and not enough to justify, you know, taking specific restrictions. But it will continue to occur. Some people speculate that there may be something beneficial about a breakthrough infection, that it will get, you know, if you don't have enough immunity to prevent a breakthrough infection, that the breakthrough infection itself will stimulate your immune system and boost your immunity. So far, we've not seen serial breakthrough infections, you know, where people just keep getting it over and over again. And population wise, then when breakthrough infections occur, it doesn't have the same public health impact as if that person was fully susceptible.
Great. Thank you. Okay, and we do have a 10:30 hearing today, so we'll need to wrap up on time. But we're going to do some KPTZ questions and then leave time for Willie.
Okay, well, I think I answered the first two questions from listeners about the CDC guidelines. And then just to summarize, it says, it just asked, you know, when is it okay to mask and not mask? And or when should you still mask? And for everyone, it's still required on public transit, be it bus or train or plane. To wear masks, also in hospitals and clinics and long-term care facilities. So those places are unchanged. And then in terms of when fully vaccinated people, and actually everyone doesn't need to mask outdoors. And under the CDC guidelines, fully vaccinated people can do pretty much anything indoors as well. Although that is subject to state and local guidelines, and you know, unfortunately, it's going to vary a bit business to business. I'm already seeing that in Clallam County, you know, Home Depot is keeping their masking mandate. Costco is using an honor system. Walmart apparently is going to do likewise, I disagree with that. I think that's unwise to kind of turn it into an honor system. And we still haven't seen exactly what the specifics of the governor's orders. But I can tell people in Jefferson County, it's still going to be important to mask indoors. And my philosophy on this is that we should all continue to mask indoors until none of us need to. So when we end the masking mandate, it'll be for everyone. And it's not far away. It will be June 30th at the latest and probably before that. There was a question, as an employer, can I ask my employees if they've been vaccinated? And with their permission, can I post this in my store so visitors will feel more comfortable? And the answer is yes and yes. Employees are not required to disclose their vaccination status, but it's not a HIPAA violation. It's not an Americans with Disabilities Act violation to ask. And it is relevant information. And stores and are kind of moving in this direction. I was just told by Dr. Murrow in Kitsap County, they're posting the vaccination status of everyone at the health department in kind of a thermometer type graph. So they're showing what the vaccination levels are. They're above 90% in the health department, and think people should know that because it does have relevance on your safety entering that spot. There was a question about the new home COVID tests. What's called the Binax Now self-tests, which are now readily available in stores. It costs about $20 for two tests, so $10 a piece. And what is their accuracy? And the official CDC studies on this is that when you compare it to the more sensitive PCR test, the home test is about 64% accurate if you have symptoms, and much lower, about 36% if you don't have symptoms. The manufacturer has some studies that look more favorable than that. They state that the comparison is more like 80%. The home test matches the PCR about 80% of the time. But what we know is that these home tests, which are useful, they're most accurate if you have symptoms. They're not very good for screening, but they are reasonably good for telling whether you have illness or not. And the question further asks, is this reported to the health department? And the answer is only if the person doing the test reports it, because it is a complete, you know, home test. It's at the option of the person doing the testing. We do recommend that people report it, and we can give you good advice as to what you should and shouldn't do, and also help assess the severity of your symptoms and whether you might need medical attention or not. Let's see, I think I answered the next question. There's a question, what exactly is the connection with blood clotting and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in women of childbearing age? And does it have anything to do with birth control pills? We do have new data on that. To date, there have been 28 cases of this blood clotting disorder among 8.7 million people who have taken the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So that's about 3.2 cases of the clotting disorder for every million people who get the vaccine. The ages now vary between 18 and 59, which the median being about 40. It's not exclusively in women. It's 22 cases were women, 6 were men. And there's no clear relationship with birth control pills or other specific risk factors. The condition closely resembles a clotting disorder that we see with the drug heparin. And that's why it's really important to correctly diagnose it in the rare event that it occurs, because heparin is what we usually use to treat clots, but it can actually make this disorder worse. So we have to treat it differently. Two more questions. One, actually similar to a previous one, you know, can we ask businesses in public space, like the Sunday Farmers Market, if their employees are vaccinated? Is there going to be any public health information like restaurant rating cards to show the vaccine status of employees? And as I previously mentioned, it is okay to ask, although people are under no compulsion to answer. We don't have any kind of official rating systems in the works, but businesses are free to collect and publicize that information at their choosing. And I do think it's a good idea, and I do think it's relevant. And then finally, my neighbor told me they were isolating after they got their first dose of the Moderna vaccine. They had read that they can shed the virus from getting the vaccine and need to be away from those who are not yet vaccinated. Is there evidence in this? And the answer is absolutely not. This is disinformation. There's no virus in the vaccine. All of the vaccines work ultimately in the same way, and that is they induce your cells to make the spike protein of the virus, and then that induces an immune reaction. But the spike protein is not infectious. So the spike one proof of this is people that get the vaccine do not test positive for COVID-19. on tests. So there's absolutely no risk for people who are vaccinated spreading infection to others. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. People that are vaccinated have much lower risk of spreading virus to other people. And that's it for the questions.
All right, thank you, Dr. Locke. Anybody have anything for Dr. Locke before we hand it over to Willie? Okay, welcome. Well,
I have one follow on to a couple of those comments. So when you say that the mask mandate will end June 30th at the latest, does that probably correlate to the time we can consider in-person public meetings? I was having a conversation in the hallway with a port commissioner this morning, and he asked that question.
Absolutely. The governor's plan, I think it's a good one, is to essentially end all restrictions by the end of June or sooner if possible. It's really going to depend on disease activity and vaccination levels. You know, as you know, the public meetings are possible under restrictive circumstances. You know, if somehow you could have a public meeting where everyone was fully vaccinated, that would not be a problem. Although I don't see how you could do that. Mm-hmm. Until the unvaccinated can safely congregate indoors, we're going to need to maintain masking mandates and some degree of public meeting restriction.
Okay. Thank you. Willie, welcome. It was nice to see all the DEM volunteers working at the hospital yesterday too, or Saturday rather, the clinic. So what's going on in your world?
Yeah, so Saturday was a big day over at Jefferson Healthcare's drive-through clinic. They were offering a Pfizer specific vaccine clinic to enable the 12 to 15 year old age group, as well as 16, 17 year olds, and really, you know, anyone else who wanted Pfizer specifically to get vaccinated. I believe they did around 200 people on Saturday. Again, saw huge demand from that 12 to 15 year old crowd. So we're, again, really thankful we're able to get that new population vaccinated just right in time for some end of the school year activities, and hopefully for, you know, an exciting activity-filled summer for them. They are offering another Pfizer clinic this coming Wednesday. Again, so anyone 12 years of age or up can get the Pfizer vaccine. And then that will be Jefferson Healthcare's last first dose clinic at their drive-through operation. They'll continue to offer second doses, obviously, to complete the series for everyone who got their first dose there. And that'll take about the next month or so. And then they will wrap up operations at that drive-through clinic, just because, again, we've seen demand fall and fall and fall. Saw an extra little bump here with the opening of the 12 to 15 year old age group. So that's why they tacked on one additional clinic this coming Wednesday, but then they'll be looking to sunset operations there. Unfortunately, a great partner as always, we're gonna work on an agreement that would let us rent out that space from them. So if we did need to ramp up kind of a high volume drive-through clinic yet again, DEM and public health could utilize that space from them to make that option available. So we'll still be able to have that in our back pocket if the need arises. But in the meantime, Wednesday is going to be their last first dose clinic. It's Pfizer age 12 and up. If kind of on the fence, if you have a child that age, now's the time to jump on it. We really want to make sure we get that last Wednesday clinic filled. At DEM and Public Health, we had another clinic at the Chimicum School District Multipurpose Room this last Saturday. Did 300 second doses in the morning, and then did a little bit over 50 single dose J&J shots in the afternoon. We'll be right back there next Saturday to do about 150 second doses and then make more single dose J&J available. Those afternoon clinics, it's 1 to 2:30, a fairly short window. Appointments are encouraged, but not necessary. We do accept walk-ins. And one thing we'd really like to offer up for this clinic if you're one of the folks who, you know, you're on the fence, you're not sure, you'd prefer to talk to a doctor or a nurse and get some advice, we're making that available. So you can head in. We have medical doctors there as part of our kind of operations team. And if you have questions and want some help making a decision, that's certainly a possibility. So come in, chat with us. You can set an appointment right there and get vaccinated right there. Or if you're still not sure, you know, we're not going to hold you hostage there. You can say, hey, it's still not time for me quite yet. And you can be on your way after, again, consulting with a doctor. So in 1 to 2:30 Chimicum School District multipurpose room. Yeah, please come just stop by, ask questions if that's really kind of where you're at in this process. We want to work with you. We want you to be comfortable. So that's an option and an opportunity for you there. Then the rest of May, we have a number of additional clinics on the calendar to target 12 to 15 year old population. With Jefferson Healthcare, again, having their drive-through operation in Port Townsend, we're going to be at Chimicum, then at Quilcene, then at Brennan to offer Pfizer to their 12 to 15 year old population, as well as 16 and 17 year old students if they so want it. So I think our first one is going to be, we're going to do Chimicum and then go in the morning and then Quilcene in the afternoon a little bit later this week. And then next week we'll be at the Brennan School for their students. And then we'll be back in Brennan on the 29th for a second dose series of Moderna. And like our Chimicum clinic, we'll have J&J available in the afternoon on a walk-in basis. If folks are just, again, looking for that easy option, they can walk in, get a quick consult, get their single dose and be done. So that's going to be on the 29th in the afternoon in Brennan. Yes, sir, Commissioner.
Yeah, just curious, Willie, whether going forward these pop-up clinics, you know, might have the Pfizer as well, so you can, you know, hit the 12 to 15 cohort.
Yeah, and with as the kind of vaccine supply chain has been, again, opening up more and more with demand going down, we are exploring the idea of having both options available. It makes handling a little bit more tricky for our vaccine management group. It makes, you know, the tracking, the appointment system, all that kind of fun stuff. There's some logistical challenges, but that is something that we hope to do, absolutely. And that's a good kind of lead into our strategy moving forward. So we have our work cut out for us through the end of May. We'll be doing some second dose clinics. We're going to be targeting students. And then June is the month that we are going to really kind of expand these pop-ups in the sense that we're going to be in some new places, partnering with some new partners to make things available. We're again, talking to the farmers markets. We're talking to a few other businesses and workplaces to make things available. And so we'll have some additional announcements on what our June calendar is going to be looking like here in the next week or so. Again, we've been looking really at improving access to the vaccine, everything from, you know, partnering with the faith-based community, bringing it to, you know, South County, Chimicum, everywhere that we can. And now we're talking, as Dr. Luck had said, we're talking about incentive for it. So we're going to be looking to, again, provide maybe a little bit more encouragement to folks. We're really going to be focused on, again, allowing folks to consult with someone, a medical professional, you know, right there at the vaccination station to have their questions answered beforehand. So provide some encouragement, provide some information there. So again, that June calendar will be rolling out here in a little bit. We want to get that really as out there and as upfront as possible, since we have been kind of planning these clinics at the last minute as needs arise, as vaccine was available. So again, June will be a little bit clearer of a picture for us. So we'll communicate that moving forward. And then again, I always want to offer, if anyone just doesn't know where to go or what to do or has questions, please call us. 344-9791, our volunteer call center. It's still being staffed, still here to help you through, whether it's just kind of a specific question you have or you need help finding an appointment, we're here for you to help you with that. Apart from vaccine, I did want to touch on masking real quick. Wanted to give another shout out to Jane, our volunteer, who's coordinating our community masking program, which demand for masks is still there. We had stocked Safeway, a week or two ago. They were already sold out within a, we're not sold out, they're free. They were already out of stock within a week. We haven't been able to fill the requests from the schools. We still have community mask makers who are making masks. We still have some stock from the state. We haven't been able to supply them fully with what they've asked for. So the demand is continuing to be there. People are still looking to mask. That being said, for an example, at this weekend's clinic, we had a local business owner who was actually going to volunteer with us and help out with traffic control. And they had to, unfortunately, back out of their volunteer commitment because they needed to be at their business to deal with the influx of customers coming in, you know, and not wanting to wear a mask, not thinking they needed to wear a mask. And, you know, we heard from a few other business owners, folks that have been, you know, absolute models of, you know, safe pandemic practices, who've done phenomenal jobs throughout this pandemic. And now they're getting an influx of people coming in to, you know, I don't need to wear a mask, the CDC says this. And, you know, and they've had to do a lot of extra work to communicate with the folks. So I wanted to remind folks again, wearing the mask, it's not to protect you, it's to protect other people. It's your civic, patriotic duty to protect your fellow citizens. Please wear one for that reason. And if that alone doesn't convince you, do it for our business owners and our employees. It's been a huge headache for them to have to deal with, you know, anti-mask customers. And, you know, we have small business owners in the community, small business employees, even employees at the larger chains. They just aren't paid enough to deal with people all the time coming in without a mask. So just do it to relieve a little bit of the headache on those business owners and those employees, because honestly, our businesses in this community have been absolutely phenomenal. It's the customers that have been the issue, not to call anyone out, but that's kind of the case. So please do it for them. Please continue to mask up. Light is at the end of the tunnel. Let's work through it together. And again, by the end of June, hopefully we all won't have to wear masks anymore, but let's just get through these next things. That's all for me.
Thank you, Willie. I can't think of a better note to end on, and we do have to jump into a hearing. So unless there's anything else real quick, let's bid adieu to Willie and Dr. Locke. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.